Continues to exist.
Just continue to exist and to do.
Without a trustee at that moment.
Momentarily. Hopefully. That's the best.
The trust principle would never be more than what was originally put in. Isn't that correct?
No, a little bit different. If they sell some more cribs, first of all, there needs to be a receiver take charge of the mausoleum, for sure. Or we have to. And we sell cribs and niches, 25% of that money is going to go into the trust, and that's locked up again. And then that should continue with it. There's still units to sell.
And by statute and by virtue of the trust agreement, $50.
I believe that's correct.
Of each sale, right? And Justice Castle, I think, may be referring to that in part. There's an absolute amount on the occasion of a purchase.
Right.
That's attributable to principal.
Right, and we have to put that money in. It's obliged. Whoever sells must put that into the perpetual trust. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for.
Thank you.
Rebuttal. I ask the court to reverse. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Seltzer, good morning.
Morning. My name is John Seltzer. May it please the court. I represent Bank of the West, which is the trustee.
Mr. Seltzer.
Yes.
You start off with Guardian State Bank.
Yeah.
Is there any real dispute that there's essentially only one trustee, the Bank of the West is successor to, they are Guardian State?
I went through great pains to point that out because of their position, but there was name changes, mergers, I had to go to the comptroller of the currency to get stuff to show it's just the same bank.
Right.
Just changed the name and merged. We started out to terminate. This is a proceeding to terminate a perpetual care trust fund, which is required by statute. Kind of interesting. Among other things, the trustee asked the court to approve its accountings and discharge a summary by year of the trustee's receipts and disbursements and expenses and trust balances since 1998 was attached to the petition. At trial, full accountings of the trustee from inception were introduced into evidence. The situation is the mausoleum has been abandoned. The mausoleum company, which owns the mausoleum, is no longer active. No distribution has been made from the trust for the maintenance of the mausoleum for over 20 years. It was clear that the trust was no longer serving its purpose. The information attached to the petition shows because of increased costs for tax return preparation, trustees' fees, that the expenses were more than the income. We felt the only way to save the trust.
So have you invaded the principal? Those expenses?
Yeah, I guess we have.
And can you do that?
What?
Can you do that?
Well, that's a good question. First of all, I want to point out that nobody objected to the accounting. I mean, when we had this trial, I had this stuff, and I asked the court when they appeared, I said, I don't even know what their objections are. So there was no objections to the accounting. When you get down to, if there had been objections to the accounting, I would point out a couple of things. We were entitled to our fees and expenses. The trust statute and...
Let me see if I can clarify. You're entitled as trustee to reasonable fees and expenses.
Yes.
As trustee and so forth. And if the income is not, if the interest is not sufficient, mm-hmm. then what happens?
Well,
just the management.
Let me talk about the statute and the trust agreement. It says the trust principal shall be held inviolate. It also says the income from the trust shall only be used for the maintenance and care of the mausoleum. So it doesn't address how the expenses are paid. And our interpretation is that that statute was meant to say, okay, if you're going to, you can only use the trust principal. You can't use the trust principal for maintenance of the mausoleum. You can only use the income for the maintenance of the mausoleum. It doesn't address how expenses are to be paid. And
if the principal is to remain inviolate, you say, except for management fees.
Well, it also says the income can only be used for maintenance of the mausoleum. If you read the statute literally like that, you can't pay any expenses.
So, and what did the court do in terms of the real dollars that were awarded? Would the award to the trustee exceed the pigeonhole with the interest?
Okay. If you look at the accountings and evidence, you will find that this trust started out with a contribution of seed money by the mausoleum company. And I didn't realize this at the time I prepared my brief, but that's actually statutorily required.
The $50 is in the trust agreement?
There's a $5,000 bond.
Oh, the bond.
I'm going to tell you what money's in the trust. There's a $5,000 bond contributed by the mausoleum company. And I said, I wasn't aware of this at the time I did my brief, but this is actually statutorily required under section 12-512.05, but that statute only applies to cemetery mausoleum trusts, to cemetery perpetual care trusts, not mausoleum perpetual care trusts.
You need to get into the 600 series to have a statute applicable to the mausoleum.
I mean, the mausoleum statutes say, the cemetery statutes apply except for these sections, and those sections are the perpetual care sections.
Okay.
So there's a $5,000 bond contributed by the mausoleum company. Then the total amount contributed to that trust from the sale of niches and crypts was $7,505.91. So that's the total amount that supposedly is to be held inviolate. The accountings of the trustees show, you know, basically up until 2008, they were never more, what was paid out was never more than the income. After that, because of expenses, yeah, it started infringing on the income a little bit, but in the same token, because of investment.
Infringing on the principal.
Oh, excuse me, infringing on the principal. Because of investment, you know, returns, when we had the trial, well, the total amount contributed to the trust, including the seed money, which wasn't required to be contributed, was $12,505.61. When we had the trial, the principal of the trust was, there was more than that in the trust. And there was way more than that than the amount contributed to Crip. So I don't think the court erred in approving the accounting, especially since they never objected. I mean.
So at the trial, there was perhaps $1,000 or $2,000 in the attributable to interest?
I don't, you know, I can just tell you what was in the trust. $12,000 more, there was more in the trust than it had been contributed. Whether you call it interest or principal or whatever, there was more in the trust than had it actually been contributed, and way more than it had been contributed.
I see. And what did the court order in terms of awarding expenses to the trustee?
Okay.
How
much? They approved the accountings, which means they approved what had been done in the past, but there was no objection to the counties. I mean, that was never an issue. You know, it's an issue on appeal, but you can't raise issues on appeal. There are never issues.
Well, let me phrase it another way. Was the award by the court, of the court use principal to pay your fees and expenses, including management, attorney's fees, and the whole collection of activities? Did the trial court use principal to award that sum?
At the end, the court found a couple things. That the claims by the Cemetery Association had no merit. The Cemetery Association.
Before I get to the substance of the rulings, the bottom line being there was an award in the trustee's favor, and was that amount, did that amount invade the principal?
They awarded, we had over $20,000 in expenses in defending this thing. The court determined that we were entitled.
So you all sought $20,000, and at the beginning of the trial there was 12 or 13, composed of interest and principal.
Is that
a fair statement?
At the beginning of the trial there was $13,000 in the trust. We didn't have that many expenses. When we have these claims by the Cemetery Association, we have to defend ourselves. So we have this trial, 2 days, request for production, all this stuff, and we incur a bunch of expenses. So when we get done with the trial, we file a motion to assess attorney's fees against the Cemetery Association. The court determines Cemetery Association had no standing, the Cemetery Association claims had no merit, and therefore, but they did allow us to pay our fees out of what was left in the trust. And we
so therefore it was all of the trust, because what you sought was greater than the 13. Right, you sought 20, there's 13 in there. The 13 is composed partly of principal, and the court awarded you all 13. Is that a fair statement?
And we've cross-appealed saying, under the provisions of the statute, the Cemetery Association should be assessed attorney's fees, because It says, in the interest of justice, there's a statute that says, in a judicial trust proceeding, in the interest of justice, the court can award attorney's fees to one party to be paid by another party.
You are relying significantly on the Nebraska provisions of the Uniform Trust Code.
Yes.
And aren't we required, if we can, to try to reconcile those statutes with the statutes that apply specifically to the mausoleum perpetual care?
I'll be the first to admit, it's not clear whether you can terminate a statutorily required trust. My argument is...
Were you even in the right court?
I think so. I think that the county court has jurisdiction over trust under the Uniform Trust Code. We were trying to save the trust. We're trying, okay, let's say, we're going to eat this thing up in expenses unless we can get it someplace. We had a bunch of claims about improper acts that we had to defend. As a result of those claims, we spent all this money. We asked the county court to assess those expenses against the Cemetery Association. They didn't, but they said, well, those were, you know, you were reasonably administering the trust, take it out of the trust. That's the travesty here.
If you were administering a trust created by a private individual with their own monies for their own private purposes, it seems to me your arguments are very clear, and I don't think I'd have any quarrel with them. My problem is, that's not what we have here. We have something that's a statutory creation. It's not for private purposes. It's for semi, or at least quasi, if not public purposes, quasi-public purposes. And how do we reconcile those statutes? I think the bank's position ultimately says the trust code trumps, but I'm not sure that that's correct.
Well, the trust code says we specifically apply to statutes to trust created pursuant to a statute. I would argue that that is why we have the trust code, to cover situations that the statute didn't contemplate. You know, I may be wrong. And if we can't terminate the trust, I mean, that's not something that took 2 days of trial. That's just a legal argument. And we were trying to save this trust. We ended up spending $20,000 defending ourselves against claims we weren't validly selected. We had to refund all the money. We had to do all this. And there's no money left. I'm saying that when someone with no interest in a trust makes claims against a trustee that aren't valid and have no merit, the provisions of the statute that we have the court assess the fees under, which is, I think it's 38393, if there's ever a time to assess fees against somebody in that, it's when someone with no interest in a trust shows up, makes non-meritorious claims against a trustee, which we have to defend, and they should pay for that, not the trust. We would ask that, we think the court abuses discretion in not assessing the fees against the Cemetery Association. There should be, if they pay the fees, there'll be money left. There'll be money over and above what was contributed for the sale of niches and crypts.
Is your position that Ms. Eubanks has no interest in the trust?
No.
Because I thought you said they showed up and had no interest in it. I beg your pardon.
I've never said she had no interest in the trust. I'm asking the court to reverse the decision of the county court that it failed to award fees. Award fees under that section to be paid by those responsible, the Cemetery Association, to the extent the claims are frivolous, and I think if you look at them, you might agree that they are. They could be assessed against the attorney. If they do that, there'll be money left in the trust, and then the court never got to the decision, can it be terminated, and if so, what happens to it? Those are legal arguments. We didn't have to have 2 days of trial on that. And if you reverse on the fee issue and say, yes, somebody else ought to pay these fees, not the trust, there will be money in the trust over and above what was to be held inviolate. And you'll have to make a decision, and somebody's going to have to make a decision, whether that can be terminated, and so what can be done with the trust funds.
Regardless of the outcome of the attorney fee component, mm-hmm. of what you seek, would it be logical to remand this to the county court to decide what happens next as compared to what it ruled? What happens next?
Yes, I think you should reverse on the fee issue and say they abused their discretion in not awarding fees to be paid by the Cemetery Association. Then I think you need to remand, okay, now there's money left in trust, you've got to decide what to do with it. I would ask this court to make a decision, can the trust be terminated? You've made arguments it can't be. If that's the case, let us know. As unreasonable as it might seem, we'll continue with the trust, pay our fees and expenses, and just hold it there till who knows where. We're trying to get this money to someplace where, and nobody's offered a better solution. We're not trying to steal this money. We're not saying give it to the county and build roads. We're trying to keep it for the care of the mausoleum.
The chief asked a question about being in the right court, and
I
want to be sure that I understand your argument and that it applies. Your argument essentially is that because of the Uniform Trust Code, county courts now have concurrent jurisdiction with the district court over trusts to the full extent permitted by the Constitution.
I think that's what the trust code is.
All right. And premised in that is sort of the jurisdictional priority that the district court has not previously assumed jurisdiction over this particular trust. Is that part of your argument?
Yes. And the trust code applies to trust created pursuant to a statute. That's what we got here. It's a trust administration proceeding under that. We gave notice to...
This would be equity. You could have gone to the district court, right?
I think the district court can exercise jurisdiction, but
can this court? Could the county court do equity in this matter?
Yes, I think the recent decisions that under the probate code and the trust code, the county court can exercise equitable jurisdiction. Yes, okay.
So that's your argument about being in the right court.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? 1 minute and 40 seconds, Mr. Brenner.
And please, the court. First of all, regardless of my esteemed colleague pointing out that he says we didn't object about the accounting, I think it's kind of replete that I was making lots of objections about that accounting, which the judge made great note of that I should probably stop. The point I'm trying to make is that, first of all, we start out with, when it was asked some of the questions, in the very beginning, when they tried to start this case, they never had any service that told any of the people, you answer to this lawsuit or anything under 25519. They didn't comply with that statute. Secondly, if you're going to say that the Bank of the West is the same as Guardian State.
They did publication, is that correct?
Yes, but they did not put the provisions of 25519 in that publication, which
says
you're going to answer.
So does it matter what the objective of the lawsuit is as to whether or not potential beneficiaries should require notice?
Yeah, and my comment is...
So what was the object of the lawsuit that required notice to the beneficiaries?
They wanted to terminate under the basis of 3838, I think is the section, where they wanted to say that they want to terminate because it's unnecessary, it's not economical. There you have to have consent, or you have to have it, because this is an irrevocable, non-charitable trust. They had to have the consent. In Ray Shire's case, points that out. But here we are. If the Bank of the West is claiming some position, it's funny. The signed trust agreement binds the fiduciary. It binds them. And in that agreement, it held that they had to do it. Also, in closing, I would point out that the purchase agreement said that we were the entity that established the perpetual care trust, and that we are, in effect, the mausoleum company. But they gave us no notice.
Before you sit down, I want to give you a chance to respond to the same question I asked Mr. Seltzer about the right court. Are they in the right court?
If you'll notice, I contended they weren't by virtue of the trust agreement itself. It said, go to the district court. If you have a problem with the receiver or nobody to deal with, I think a receiver should have been done by the trustee, go to the district court and say, Your Honor, we have nobody to deal with. We need you to appoint a receiver over this mausoleum.
But that argument is based on the content of the trust agreement and not on the constitution and statutes of the state of Nebraska that allocate powers between the respective courts.
Correct. And that's where you would have been validly for a receiver in the district court, because then they could say, we need a receiver of this mausoleum. I'm following the case of Omaha National Bank versus Westlawn, a mausoleum case, which said when they don't obey, you ought to go to the district court and get an appointment.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. We ask you to reverse on that, but deny the attorney fees. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next case of